is March 1988, the critically acclaimed smash hit comedy Police Academy 5, Assignment Miami Beach, is finally playing at your local Cinemaplex. You are unironically enjoying Never Gonna Give You Up, while your college-bound brother is pretending to have read and have important opinions about the Satanic Verses. But you don't care too much about that, because Kevin from Second Period asks you on what might be a date to see Beetlejuice. What do you do? How should you feel about this? And what's up with this Beetlejuice guy? It's time to pick up this new magazine and see what they have to say about it. Yes, it's time to...
Listen to Sassy.
And now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano, Pamela Rubin, and Kevin Coogan.
Oh, yeah.
Keith Coogan.
Oh, shit. Here are your hosts, Tara Ariano, Pamela Rubin, and Keith Coogan.
Kevin Coogan forever. Oh,
and Keith Bacon. Kevin Coogan is the Glemby version.
Oh. That was a call forward.
Yeah, it's a call forward. Oh my goodness. I'm very invested in what's happening to the owner of the Sassy magazine. I'm very excited. Is it a date? It might not be.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Thank you so much for all your feedback about our first episode, for your tweets, your Instagram comments, your reviews. We especially appreciate. We will read some of those in our next episode. But it's been so nice to hear from you and to hear that you're so excited about this project that is very exciting to all of us as well.
You know, and it's also in your phone calls because, you know, when we all had Sassy, we were kind of alone with Sassy in our rooms.
It's true.
And getting to hear your voices as geeked out as our voices are, it has that same sassy feeling of, turns out you're not alone.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Guess what else?
What else?
Since the podcast launched, I got my period for the first time in 5 months. So it's working. I don't know. Guess what? If everybody around our age in a early perimenopausal situation, be careful. Mm-hmm. We may sink.
Looks like Pam solved her Starlog jam.
Well, I also had my period last week, Pam, so I'm sorry that my strong alpha energy knocked you back on sync.
No, it's great. It's great. Uterus, meterus, usterus.
So in our first episode, we talked about the teen life topics of the March 1988 issue of Sassy, of course, their premiere issue. This week, we're going to be talking about pop culture topics in that same March 1988 issue. Before we get into that, let's talk about what were each of us consuming pop culture-wise in March 1988. I'll go first. Pam helpfully curated a list of what was popular this particular month, and the one that jumped out at me was A Groovy Kind of Love, the Phil Collins hit, more remembered now than the movie it was on the soundtrack for.
Buster.
I would not have remembered that if Dave had not said it.
If you could imagine Phil Collins in The Great Train Robbery, it was kind of like what they were going for.
Yeah.
Wait, Phil Collins is also the lead of Buster?
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Oh,
this
boy.
Is his hopeful transition into actordom, and it failed.
Yes, and then Hollywood was like, we already have a Bob Hoskins. Goodbye, sir.
And he was like, wait, I'm Michael Douglas. And we're like, no, you're not.
No.
It also could have been that they were so embarrassed by the video for this song that they just cut all ties, because it's Phil Collins in an abandoned industrial warehouse longingly watching personal home videos, but are also like scenes from Buster. And he's like smoking a cigarette. And oh, it's just so cliche and bad.
Sure.
And that song's not great. Like, that song is kind of dumb. And if you're going to pick one song from that movie, it's going to be Two Hearts, which is like okay as well. It's
also
not great.
A good song.
It's okay.
I had the album on cassette because that's how you consume music at that time.
Sure.
And elsewhere in this curated list that Pam gave us, Cat's Eye by Margaret Atwood, maybe my favorite novel of all time. And if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't read it, it's probably relevant to your interests. Also a story about how girls' friendships when they're teens and older can be toxic sometimes. An excellent, excellent read.
Yeah, a book you recommended to me, my first Margaret Atwood.
I think I may have forced it on you, in fact.
Want to be my friend, Pam?
Pass this quiz.
Dave.
Oh, okay. Let's see. So, unfortunately, nothing for Starlog Jam in the sci-fi area this month.
What a bummer. I'll have to add that into future curations.
And no movies that launched in March really fit the bill for me. So I am going to cheat a little bit and say at the tail end of February, still in the theaters in March, was Young Guns.
Sure.
Which I enjoyed at the time. Mm-hmm. Sort of your modern Rat Pack, what they call them, Brat Pack.
Yep.
Western. The only thing I remember from it is somebody uses a roll of dimes as a bullet to kill somebody. That's all he had.
Okay.
On TV, Sledgehammer, kind of an airplane, Naked Gun-esque TV show, which I enjoyed. Mm-hmm. Very dumb. And this was still in the period where I was taking my tiny little TV in my room, my little black and white TV. Yes. Aww. You know, like the little 5-inch ones.
Sure.
And then draping my blanket over it to watch late night Letterman. And this is back in the time we were still doing all the stuff I really enjoyed, like hydraulic press stuff.
Sure.
Throwing stuff off the roof. Mm-hmm. It was a real different vibe from everything else on TV. So that's what I was watching.
Well, at this time, I was still living in Saskatchewan. And because Saskatchewan does not observe daylight saving time, half the year, Letterman would come on as early as 9:30.
Bonus.
And that was a great time.
It's like the mini version of when we lived in Hawaii in prime time. Sometimes start at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Really oh, my gosh. Yeah.
For cable. Pam.
Yeah. I also would stay up. I had to stay up to try to watch Letterman. But I recorded things. I do need to fix that. I have looked up the calendar and I saw I was in the seventh grade in March of 88. So I apologize for last time when I had all my dates wrong. So I was definitely watching a lot of MTV Friday night videos and Headbangers Ball and 120 Minutes and like Monty Python and the Young Ones and Remote Control. I was on MTV an awful lot. Which means this was also that, like the heyday of my mom's most hated song of 1988. Parents just don't understand. She doesn't understand. She hates the song probably still. And I don't even think she knows that the Will Smith she loves deep in her heart is Fresh Prince. And I will never tell her because
I cannot take her to the red table to have that conversation.
No, right? She thought this song was so insulting. And as I've gotten older, I mean, it was a 12-year-old runaway. Like, it's a complicated. it's not appropriate. No. I see where my mom was a little apoplectic and just, like, unable to tell me exactly why parents did understand. that's what I was consuming. A lot of MTV.
Yeah. It was the heyday of MTV. There was a viral tweet that was going around this week where it was like MTV tweeted, here's our schedule for this week. And it was like five shows, some Teen Mom, some The Challenge. And then literally everything else was ridiculousness. MTV, what are you doing? Just
it's
like
different.
Years and
it's
years
different.
And years of music history. And it's just Rob Dyrdek all
it's
the time.
It's a bummer. Because if they just dropped, like if one day a week was the original schedule and just dropped it back in, that would be so much fun.
People would go crazy.
It would be so much fun.
Even if it wasn't videos, even if it was just like old seasons of The Real World, people would love it. Anyway, no one is asking us to program MTV to their detriment. Instead, we are here to talk about Sassy. So that was us in March 1988. Let's see what Sassy was up to. Starting with What Now by Karen. Catchpole for the first and I believe last time ever. Every other issue be by Christina Kelly, as it should be. She seemed like she vibed with it better, probably. What Now is a 2-page spread. It would be little short items about news things, mostly pop culture, not entirely. Some short fashion things, some newsy bits and bites.
Fun facts.
Yeah.
Fun facts about
celebrity
celebs.
Birthdays, etc. Yeah. I think we can all agree the best thing in our very first What Now is a Mackenzie Astin fan video, which, by the way, if you're curious about it, is on YouTube in its entirety. This is a VHS tape you could buy, but now you don't have to because YouTube exists.
I am so glad that you sent this link to this whole thing, and I had to stop. I realized I was watching the whole thing. It's very long. I got my 1995 worth. He's like... he's like starting off like, hey, welcome to my house, because he's at Six Flags. And he's like, just kidding. Ha ha ha. And it just gets better from there. Oh, he's 14 and he's in like an outfit and he's with some quote unquote friends who are going to like hang at Magic Mountain for the day, which is like prime Wally World time. So it's just so young, a little young Hollywood. And it is made. I am not a McKenzie. I'm not like these kinds of boys that they're just not for me. But right now, watching one of these videos is so for me right now.
Who is this guy?
You've probably seen him. At this time, he was like the little cutie boy at the tail end of the run of Facts of Life. He was like,
you might not have noticed him around Clooney. That's why I didn't notice.
Wait, wasn't that? Leo DiCaprio was on Growing Pains.
He was, yeah, Leo was on Growing Pains, but it's same kind of thing. He was, okay. He was brought in.
Cousin Oliver.
Yeah, he was brought in to revitalize the franchise at the end. This is when Cloris Leachman was also on, and she was like running the
R.I.P.
Yes, R.I.P. Exactly.
The place called All Good Things, right?
Was it? I don't remember what it was called.
Because I used to always think like, well, that's not going to last long. All Good Things must come to an end. I was like, this is a doomed title.
Well, this is after Edna's Edibles gave way to, like, now we're a store that sells, like, novelty, fun-smelling erasers and stuff, which was definitely a thing in the 80s.
Sure.
We loved those stores.
Snickers.
Exactly. And it was, like, that kind of store. Uh-huh. And so Cloris Leachman ran that store, and Andy, played by Mackenzie Astin, was, like, her nephew or an orphan or something. I can't remember. It doesn't matter.
Very 80s. It was very 80s.
Yes. He's, like, second-generation Hollywood royalty. Patty Duke and John Astin from The Addams Family are his parents. I think they're both dead. Huh. And Sean Astin from The Hobbit, or from Lord of the Rings, is his brother.
Okay.
I pulled up a couple of clips for Dave to play so that you don't have to watch the whole thing. But, like, this first one is very much just why I watched upwards of half an hour of it.
Sometimes I just wish I could be a regular kid. And then sometimes I'm extremely glad that I guess I'm a celebrity. Having my cake and eating it, too, would be being able to be a celebrity, get VIP passes, stuff like that, and then not get recognized. I guess that's what being a senator is all about.
Yeah.
Was he like the night before he was at home and his parents were having a party downstairs and he was like on the stairs listening in? They were just talking politics and that's the one thing he took away and that was a grown-up thing he was going to say tomorrow at his video?
Wait, do you think it was all the actors being like, maybe I should be a senator? Like, that's what I want. I want this. Like, did they make that idea?
If Ronnie can do it, certainly I can do it.
Ronnie can do it, yeah, certainly. And then the second clip I just appreciated for us. While he's doing this voiceover, he's playing whack-a-mole.
I also like to write. Writing's a lot of fun. You can create anybody you want and make them do whatever you want. It's power. Writing is power.
Die! Die! Die!
I think we dodged a bullet on him not being a senator. That's some dead zone kind of energy.
I mean, he could still do it. He's young. He's got,
yes.
I mean, he's really, President Astin will remember you, Dave.
I mean, if he was 14 in 1988, yeah, he's like only a little bit older than
me. Yep.
So, you know, he's Ted Cruz's age.
Oh, boy.
Dave.
Oh, boy. Wow. This video was like written up in the what now, like it's some kid's idea to do this, to show her friends that she's a real fan. But it's so obviously a fake story to make this video.
It fits right in with the first issue of Sassy, for sure.
Well, yeah.
Suspicious copy.
In their defense, with all the stuff we were talking about in the first episode about, you know, these letters are fake, these questions are fake. Mm-hmm. Like, how else are you going to do it?
Sure.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just sort of a given that they were, but they didn't have to be so obvious about
No, it's true.
And this feels like, it's like that same vibe.
Yeah. But it's funny to think back to, like, this was definitely an era in time for, like, the VHS market of, like, what are things people will spend money to buy to watch over and over and over and over and over again? It was, like, this, workout videos, obviously Disney videos and, like, movies in the clamshell cases they used to have. My grandparents had them all. And this producer, whose name was Jeffrey S. Lloyd, apparently the father of Emily Lloyd, the alleged prime mover of this product. the daughter. He went on to make another one about Chad Allen, who I think was on Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman. He was another, like, cutie of this sort.
The dangerous two first name type.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They'll break your heart.
Yeah. So I did try to Google if Emily Lloyd, like, went on to do anything or was a real person. But there is an actress who also has that name, so it was hard to determine that. So if you know this Emily Lloyd, or you are her, or if you are Jeffrey Lloyd,
with a secret to share.
If you are her, check with yourself, make sure you, and then get back to us.
Call the hotline, 720 Sassy Go, and tell us about this project because we want to know. Yep.
This What Now really shows that their projected concept of their reader was just like a default straight white girl in the suburbs.
For sure.
You know, there's no, are you gay or anything?
Yes.
Like the closest that the most foreign they get is Australian.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think the most expected part of the What Now is several mentions of Keith Coogan, the patron saint of issue one. I don't know who works with and for Keith Coogan that got him to just, like, they almost named this issue just Coogan.
What if the actual thing was they actually didn't put him in the magazine, but just before it went to print, he crawled out of the crawl space in which he lives at the Sassy offices and started typing in all the stuff about this great actor, Keith/Kevin Coogan.
Bad Keith. Yeah.
He acted like War Games. How about Keith Coogan?
Kevin Coogan lives in the crawl space and he comes out and he does the story.
Kevin again. It's not Kevin.
Kevin Coogan.
It is to me.
It is now. Keith Dillon and Kevin Coogan.
But what is the current Coogan count then? Because we had three mentions in the first.
Yeah, the CCC's at three right now, I think.
Okay. Triple C at three. Got it.
He was in the What He Said
right.
in our previous issue.
Mm-hmm.
He's here talking about his movie Wipeout,
right.
which was released the following year as Under the Boardwalk, and it's on Prime. We'll link it in the show notes if you want to watch it. Top up.
And you
top
do?
Top up your Cooganites.
Yes.
And then he's also mentioned in the item about the Sassy launch party.
I believe it would be go to Coogan Town.
One of the lesser Bill Lawrence projects, but fans are very passionate about it. Yes.
Yes, his fans are total cougars.
A couple more items just about this thing, Wipeout, because I looked it up.
Uh-huh.
He is, at this time, certainly one of the more famous people in it. He had been at this point in Adventures in Babysitting, but also in it is Wallace Langham, future star of The Larry Sanders Show.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Sonny Bono had a cameo. Character actor Tracy Walter is in it. He's in Aaron Brockovich as the guy who worked at PG&E and, like, gives her the final bit of evidence that she needs to break the case wide open at a bar. And it was written by Robert King, as in co-creator of The Good Wife and The Good Fight and Evil. Yeah.
Does it have a really annoying cartoon explanation of things as we go along?
Well, let's watch it and find out, I guess.
Curiously, Sassy seems to do a lot of bumping into things mysteriously. In this two-page spread, they have two oops we bumped into, and the first one is chancing upon the Married to the Mob shoot in New York City.
Yep. I saw Married to the Mob, which is bizarre, in the theater, in the Capitol Theater in Regina, which is our... Thank you, Pam. Now closed,
Regina.
Sadly.
Rhymes with fun.
It does. Which is weird because it was certainly probably rated R and I would have definitely been too young. But I don't remember anything about it except the poster is gorgeous. It's done a very, like, old-fashioned illustration style. Looks like the Sting poster.
Yep.
We'll link that in the show notes, too. And it's on Max Go. If you have HBO or Cinemax, you have Max Go and you can watch it. Directed by
Max Go.
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
Yeah. Annoyingly, it's only on the web.
Oh, God.
I know. I don't know what, like, why would you launch HBO Max, have Max write in the name and not integrate your Cinemax shit?
Have they
What are
hired,
you doing, Warner
have
Brothers?
Has anybody in marketing hired in the past, like, 15 years? Because, like, there's just so many things that you can't find or have, like, such bad generic names that it's impossible to search for. And I just feel like there is this generational sort of, like, tenacity or like, they're just like, no, we can't give this up. And like nobody younger than like 45 is in the biz and can like fix this. Like, look, you need one thing. It's HBO Max. Everybody goes to HBO Max. Yes. Everybody uses HBO Max. You don't splinter your market.
Yes. I agree. It makes no sense. But anyway, that's where it is. If you want to watch
Tangent. That's a you know what that is. That's a
Pam enjoyed that very much. She didn't see her laughing at your rant.
I love you guys so much.
That really should have been a Starlog jam, really.
Starlog side jam. You're totally right. I understand. But also, I just wanted to make sure that you knew why sassy girls keep bumping into people. Do you understand that there's a romance to the bump into, that it's just like, oh, my God, when I'm grown up, I'm going to have coffee and I'm going to walk down the street and I'm going to bump into a Married to the Mob shoot, the Police Academy shoot on a beach.
Right.
And now Tom Cruise, the ultimate bump into. Of 1988.
To be fair to Sassy, you do bump into things in New York, which is where they were.
It's just a lot of framing of bumping into things.
Sure.
And as with everything in this first issue, I kind of don't believe it.
Okay. Fair enough.
This was before New York was called a character.
But anyway, yes.
Bumped into Tom Cruise as well.
They also bump into Tom Cruise in Florida when they're there for a
cocktail
photo shoot. While he was making cocktail and while he was still married to Mimi Rogers, his first wife. Mm-hmm. One of the many women whose lives were improved after they got divorced from Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise at the time, somebody you thought was cute, or were you like from the get-go, oh no?
Me, I never thought he was cute.
Uh-huh. I was an outsider's person, all of them, all the Kevins. I guess you call them all Kevin. Dave, but Kevin Cruise, Kevin Swayze,
right?
Kevin
Macchio.
The Kevin kid,
of course.
Kevin Macchio, Kevin Thomas Howell, Kevin Estevez. Yes, they were all in Young Kevins too, which is probably where you saw them.
And St. Kevin's Fire, a lot of them were in as well.
Eventually, I was very, very, very into Kevin Bacon, so I understand where Dave's leading this.
Right. Yeah.
6 degrees of your heart.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Tom Cruise was not for me. I did like Patrick Swayze.
Tom Cruise has always had this energy where he's trying a little too hard to be sort of an outgoing person in a way that he's not. Like, I feel like he has a lot of energy, but I feel like he doesn't quite know how to project it like a human.
Sure.
Right. There's always like this reptilian quality about his outwardness that I feel like he's always had, but it's worse now.
Yes.
But you can see it back then too. And I think that repels people.
It works for him. It's been working for him.
It has.
I would say he seems fine, you guys. Like, it's working for him.
It wasn't that for me. It was like when Pam said Mackenzie Astin was not for her, like, he's the kind of boy that I would have a crush on, like a real cute cutie. Like, I was a Matthew Broderick person. That's the kind of that's the kind of boy that I would have a crush on.
Okay.
The only thing I was allowed to come and see when my parents were watching R-rated stuff was they'd let me watch the old time rock and roll dance in Risky Business.
Aww.
They'd come and get me, and they'd be like, "It's time for you to get to watch part of a rated R movie." And then they'd be like, "Go to your room and finish watching The Exorcist or whatever." But like, here's another Stephen King book. And so Tom Cruise was grown up for me, him in his underwear and his thing. Like, I didn't really. And then when I found out what the movie was about, I understood. The point is, he was not like one of the boys I would put a picture of on the wall, but he did represent, like, I guess that's why some people become senators. You know what I mean? Like, he seemed wise. I was more into someone like Robert Downey Jr., Johnny Depp, as we'll get into, I guess, through every other issue for the rest of this.
Boy, we really will.
Yeah, we really will. What's a Glenby?
Yeah, great question. So there's an item in What Now about a discount you can get at an institution or an operation.
Totally called, not paid for.
Right, called Glenby. Apparently it's a chain of like barbershops.
Yeah, like Fantastic Sam's.
Yeah, or Supercuts or whatever.
Right.
Whose idea was it Glemby, it's the worst.
Glemby is the guy who worries. He's the Jack Lemmon character from Glengarry Glen Ross. He's like, oh, I gotta get the leads. He's like, that's Glemby. Glemby.
Yeah. Yeah, Glemby, it's just whatever they're selling, you don't want to buy it. Like, if you see Glemby on a bag of chips, you don't want to buy them. You don't want Glemby in.
Wasn't Glemby the guy who wanted the ring from Lord of the Rings?
I was seeing this guy and he was a total Glemby. I had to bounce. Yeah. Even the Glemby, like, I'm going to think that haircut will look like Gumby, and you don't want that haircut either.
Yes.
It sounds like a gum brand that went out of business in the 20s.
It just sounds like a mistake. It's like sometimes, you know, we all make fun of focus grouping, but sometimes focus grouping is right. And this is a name that would never pass now.
Wait. Glemby. I would smoke a Glemby or I would order a Glemby from a dame. A Glemby neat. And a pack of Glembys from a dame. That's when it is.
What it makes me think of, this is a much worse, I mean, Glemby is a worse example. But now that we live in Texas, there obviously is the Tex-Mex aisle is much longer than in any other place we've ever lived.
Sure.
And there's one brand of Tex-Mex food with a little sombrero on it, because you gotta.
You don't have to, but they do.
No, you don't. Yeah,
carry
they
on.
Do. They gotta, yeah.
Yes. Called Gebhardt's, like the most German name ever.
Yeah.
Who is buying refried beans from the Gebhardt's?
But they haven't changed their logo or packaging in forever.
Since 1977.
Like that font they use is a very late 70s, early 80s
really
font.
Is.
Yeah, it's great.
Anyway.
It's a real Glemby's.
Anyway, check out Glemby's. Go get your hair cut. I mean, not now. When the pandemic's
not over. Now. Not now, yes.
So they did some bragging, talked about the sassy launch party in L.A. And Pam, I know you were hurt on behalf of the other editors that only Jane got to go.
I mean, what? Like, it's just her being like, it's me and my L.A. party. The others had to work. I was like, aren't you the boss? Yeah, I would be so mad. Like, at least one or two people, or you send like five and you don't go. I don't know.
Yeah,
I get it. She's the one that they were. I mean, she's still XOXO Jane, right? They really did make Jane a brand on mm-hmm. top of that. So I get this was the beginning of that, maybe.
Right. I mean, that is the job of the editor. Like, she's doing PR for the brand. But it is strange that not even one of them got to go, like, to it on a Saturday, fly them out in the morning, have them come back that night. This is how time zones works.
But even particularly because they are like, we're a group of friends who hang out
right.
and happen to make this magazine. That's what's sort of surprising about it. It seems off brand.
I mean, but these parties are basically like you give people opportunity to take photos.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
You want as many celebrities and you only need one face of the magazine. Right.
It's true.
It's just going to be the editor with Kevin Coogan or whatever.
Yes.
I'm Kevin sure he was
Zappa.
There. Was he there? I think Kevin Coogan was there, right?
Keith Coogan was at the park. Of course he was there. Yes.
CCC.
So that brings our CCC
four.
To four.
I think we're still only at three.
Oh, okay.
He's mentioned in the movie reviews. We haven't gotten there yet.
Got it.
Spoiler.
But the other thing that it comes up here is that also in attendance at this party was Corey Haim, RIP. And this is like another meta runner that happens through What Now, which is how many celebrities that are mentioned in this section by the time we get to them are now deceased, because it keeps happening and it's very strange. In this section alone, we get Jonathan Demme, not mentioned by name, but director of Married to the Mob, Corey Haim, Michael Jackson, mm-hmm. one of the Beastie Boys, Prince.
Yeah.
There's a bunch. Like, it's really strange. And every time you're flipped through, even every headline's like, well, there's Patrick Swayze. There's like someone else. Like, we really, you lose a lot.
Yes. It is sad. I don't have anything pithy to say about it.
But the one that gets pictured with Jane for this party is this guy who is described as new funny man Brian Evans.
Mm-hmm.
People are looking at it on our socials. They were like, am I supposed to know who this guy is? He's a crooner now.
Mm.
And he's on Twitter, so you can look him up.
Oh my gosh, his Twitter account is Croon1?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was a genuine surprise. Oh my gosh. That's adorable.
And then there is the rest of the little tidbits. We've got the Beastie Boys saying that they're going to rip off Michael Jackson's mask and spit in his face, which seems a little much. But who would win that fight?
Well, I think it's obvious.
What about his monkey? What if Michael Jackson starves Bubbles for a while and then unleashes the bubble fury?
Chimps are mean.
Yeah.
It's true.
Oh, like, my gosh.
Remember the chip that ripped off that lady's face?
Of course.
Well.
Hmm.
Oh, so you think if Bubbles was in the fight, the Beasties don't stand a chance?
Well, I'm just saying it might even the odds.
You just made me remember I had a dream about Michael Jackson last night, and I was stuck talking to Michael Jackson and Andrew Dice Clay, and I didn't know how to dissolve. I was so mad. I was so mad at the person who wanted me to.
That dream was a real Glumby.
I got to get out of this pandemic. This podcast is doing very weird things to me.
We also have information that a scared pig was at a fashion show. Mm-hmm. We're learning that international pen paling is just one. And here's something you're not going to see anymore. S-A-S-E away,
right.
Self-addressed stamped mm-hmm. envelope. We just don't see that phrase anymore.
The original sassy.
And they have a couple birthdays sprinkled in. The ones they deem notable. Mac Astin's brother. Mm-hmm. It's going to be 17 on the 28th.
Yep.
Of February.
Of February.
So apparently it's already happened. And John Bogdanovi, 26, on March 2nd. Mm-hmm. They want you to know that it's not Bon Jovi on his birth certificate. It's Bon Bogdanovi.
Well, it's pronounced.
I know it is.
They happened to bump into his birth certificate. They just wanted you to know that they read it walking down the street.
And here's some facts you can use from Sassy. Mm. The origin of St. Patrick's Day, kind of.
Yeah.
They're writing the Wikipedia summary back in 88 for us. Mm-hmm. Lithium was to 7-Up as cocaine was to Coca-Cola. Used to be in it. Did not know that, actually. So thank you.
I didn't either, actually. No.
Look at that. That's some prime slumber party facts.
Mm-hmm.
The perfect temperature to stand outside naked is 86 degrees Fahrenheit. Thanks, Sassy.
Yeah, not going to try it.
But see, that's a little scandally.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy What Now because it is a little like, did you know? Did you hear? It's a, Bridgerton. But it's like, the perfect temperature to stand outside naked.
It gets you in the mood to read the rest of the magazine because it's just like little quick bits.
Oh, yeah. Plus, you're like turning the magazine sideways to read some stuff. And if you throw it on the ground, you can still read it, which I think is really important when you're pretending to not be reading your sassy when you're reading your sassy. It was just a fun bubblegum spread. Listen Up. This is the sassy team, the gang, splitting up reviews for five or six albums this month. I forgot how much I used to know the 5-star ranking by heart. So if you have this kind of nostalgia like I do, 1 5-star was I've Seen God and this is the soundtrack. 4-star, warning, this album can be habit forming. 3-star, better than 2-star, not as good as 4. Very true. 2-star, wait until it's in the secondhand bin. That's something also we don't, the secondhand bin. And 1-star, I've heard better Frisbees.
Nah.
Yeah. This month's top spot is In Excess's Kick. And we just heard.
Sorry, Pam, can you speak up a bit?
Sure. It's because I'm clutching my heart.
I know.
From talking about Never Tear Us Apart. I'm very sorry. It's just that song goes right to me. But yes, a very important Will He Ask Me to Dance song, Never Tear Us Apart. Other hits you probably know from In Excess's Kick, Devil Inside, New Sensation. Mm-hmm. It's just a great album. It deserves 12-star. It's so good.
I saw that tour. I saw that tour at Toronto's Exhibition Place, the Mistake by the Lake, they called that stadium for good reason, because no matter what time of year it was, there was like an icy blast coming off the lake and that place was just freezing. But the only thing I remember about that is when they did that song, Never Tear Us Apart, when they get that pregnant pause, boy, these guys milked it for all it was worth live. Like, it was really dent. And then, like, a minute and a half later, after you've gone, got a hot dog, and came back. And, like, yeah. INXS wasn't, like, so big that the crowd was into absolutely everything they were doing. Like, mm-hmm. they weren't U2, right?
Right.
So it was like, dent. Ooh, oh. All right, but it should be coming now, right? All right, come on. And then, like, at 90 seconds, they're like, okay, let's do it. And it happened. They're like, all right, good. We're back to song. It was
That's
weird.
That's because,
like,
you guys were cold.
That's true.
Like, it wasn't like that inside. People would be like, oh, hello, Tim. It's important, that part. Silence. It's the only time you get to talk to them, and they talk back to you, and you all are holding each other together in this moment.
Sure.
This is where I'm going to plug the documentary Mystify, which I saw at the beginning of the pandemic last year, but I think it's from 2019. It's about Michael Hutchins. And man, if you haven't fallen in love with INXS again, this album, this movie will bring it right back. Yeah,
it's a great album. It's a good thing that by this time, as Neil says in his review, it had been out for a little bit, because he doesn't really say very much about it other than it's great. You should get it. It's really good. But he does also call out the album design, which makes sense since he's the art director. And he's right. The album design is very good and very, very memorable. It's an undeniable album. He's right about that. Mm-hmm.
That is The One I Love by R.E.M. from their album Document. It's clear that Jane and Neil had to arm wrestle for who would get top spot because they both got 5 stars and somehow Neil won. When Jane really wants you to know that she loves R.E.M. because she saw them first, because she knows Michael Stipe, because Michael Stipe. That's mm-hmm. Jane. This is R.E.M. But it is also a legitimately good album. This is the one that has It's the End of the World as We Know It on it. And if it wasn't the beginning of your R.E.M., knowledge, like, this is the kind of album where an older sibling is like, here, or you find it and they're like, whatever, I'm more into Life's Rich Pageant or whatever, and you mm-hmm. and you bring home Document and you're like, this one I love, it's got videos.
It's a good one. It's not my favorite. Life's Rich Pageant actually is probably mine. Sorry.
It is. No, I mean, it really is. That's why I think Document is one that you end up finding, you know, when you want to get 12 cassettes for a penny, Document yes. is there, not yes. Life's Rich Pageant. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did anybody actually do that? Did you guys do the
collection? Yes, of course.
Oh, yes. Oh, really? Yes. That's why I had probably shitty credit at 12.
Yeah, I was still doing it when we moved to Ontario, and that's how I ended up with, like, some Guns N' Roses album that no one wanted.
Did you do it with your parents' permission, or did you just
no.
do it?
No.
They knew.
Really? And they still let yes. you do it? Because who doesn't know that that's not worth it?
I have some thoughts. Well, one was I knew, like, one of my friends was like, we're too young for them to do anything about this.
Uh-huh.
They shouldn't allow you to enter into a binding contract. So do whatever the fuck you want.
Does your friend now defend drug dealers and stuff like that? Seems like the type.
He's married to a former daughter of the first lady. But no, this is how I found, like, Elvis Costello's Spike. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were so many things that you could get for a penny. We were like, what's this? Between, like, my cousin in almost college and 12 tapes for a penny, this this was how I found good music.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate it.
Yeah, now that I think about it, it doesn't seem like something that my parents would
have allowed. No, it doesn't. That's why I was surprised.
But I did have, like, at a certain point, I had a discretionary, like, they didn't want to just give me money anymore. Before I got a job, they gave me an allowance, and it was, I won't say what it is, because Pam will be scandalized, but it was pretty generous. Uh-huh. And they were just like, this is the money you get for the month, and we are not giving you any money for anything else. And this was, like, how they wanted to teach me financial responsibility, uh-huh. which I was probably too young by at the time that they gave it to me to really get it. This was when I was, like, in grade 9. So they were like, if this is what you want to do with your money, go ahead. Like,
Smoke the whole pack of cigarettes.
Kind of.
Columbia House.
Yeah. Basically.
I didn't have a checking account. I wonder if I just put cash in an envelope they were like, oh boy, let's just, it's fine. I mean, knowing me, I probably stayed up to date on it for a little while. And mm-hmm. then when you realized you had to pay every month for this club, that's probably when things got dicey.
Yeah.
I don't remember getting jumped out of the Columbia.
No, I guess I completed it at some point. It never showed up when we tried to buy a house.
That'd be a great little short story. Like somebody buys the Columbia House name and records and stuff. And now like 30 years later, they come to collect and all the delinquents.
Yes. You owe us 600 months worth of albums.
You owe us $6,000 or you got to get back life's sweet pageant, whatever the fuck it was.
But because I moved a lot, I got to do it more than once. That I remember. I'd move and I'd be like, oh, I get to do 12 again because it's a new address.
Wow.
Yeah.
They had it all blocked off. The electric. That really sounds like Seven Nation Army from White Stripes. White Stripes? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lawsuit there somebody can do.
It's just two notes up and then two notes down.
Yeah, but even her voice when she comes in is very much the same.
Oh, I see. Well, I had not heard of Cindy Lee Barry Hill before, so I listened to this album. And I think that if this came with my 12 tapes, I would have played this one a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it.
She's got like a Ricky Lee Jonesy kind of sound. This is what I would have liked at the time, too, probably.
All I know is Cindy Lee Barry Hill sounds like a babysitter's name from some sort of Babysitter's Club-esque novel of the time.
or a Manson girl.
Or a Strawberry Shortcake doll.
Uh-huh.
Cindy Lee Barry Hill, scratch, scratch, scratch. Blueberries.
Cindy Lee Barry Hill lived all alone at the top of Cherry Tree Lane.
Cindy Lee Barry Hill would probably be like Boysenberry or something like slightly different like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. If you know about Cindy Lee Barry Hill and she was your favorite, give us a call and tell us which one was a hit. Like, I genuinely couldn't figure it out. This song you're playing, that's Who's Going to Save the World, right? Isn't that the song that you just did the clip from?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember either. Sorry.
This is the Eurythmics Savage, a Eurythmics album I'm not very familiar with because I just know about them more from Sweet Dreams and Missionary Man. Like, I hadn't heard of any of these songs.
Amazing.
Crazy to me.
Beethoven is how does that go again? What are
the
words?
I like to listen to Beethoven.
How is this something you guys both know?
It's terrible. It's a terrible song, but it's like it sticks in your head.
Okay,
right?
Well, that one wasn't a hit, but like you've placed a chill in my heart. That was a hit.
Yeah. And I Need a Man. That got released. Yeah,
I Need a Man.
That's a bad rendition of it.
No,
were
that's
they
good.
Popular in Canada for these songs? Is this a possible? Or am
no,
I just
your
I was in a
were
spot
big in the States.
They were big in the States.
You just were too busy with
some people
checking
have blind spots, Pam. It's fine.
12 discs for a dollar.
But this is like when you're like, I'm super into Ministry or Depeche Mode, and they're like, do you know what they used to sound like? And then they play this completely different, like, every day is Halloween or whatever. You're like, what's going on? What happened to my band? This just didn't sound like Eurythmics to me. But they gave it 4 stars here in Sassy. And they said, you know, they're cool and catchy and Annie Lennox is awesome, which, you know, Christina's right.
Yes, Christina's review actually tells you some things about the album, unlike some other reviewers on this page. So thank you, Christina, for actually getting into some detail about why this deserves 4 stars, which I agree. It is a 4-star album for sure.
What did she say?
She says she's not a huge fan of Eurythmics, but there's something about this album that the songs are typically sinister Eurythmics songs, and others are incredibly cool and catchy. So she played it loud enough to make her neighbor bang on the wall. So she mentions some songs she likes, like I Need a New Man and Wide-Eyed Girl. These, I just feel like I'm saying words. Brand New Day. Missionary Man is a really good song.
Yes.
I feel like we've missed a classic Dave moment that no matter what song you were supposed to play, it's queuing up these reviews, you played that song. And then every time it was like, all right, this time he's going to play Eurythmics. And then it'd be like, ba-doom, 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 ba-doom. And then Dave would laugh louder and harder.
It is weird to think of a time that this song was a song that was probably number one and was all over the place. It launched this guy's career and it wasn't just this meme.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he's done well by it since. I think he's making some bank off YouTube and whatnot. And,
yeah. Do we even need to say who this was? This is Rick Astley, the album Whenever You Need Somebody.
Yeah, he has a really good spirit about what has happened here, I believe. Mm-hmm. And also, this album is good. Together Forever is a really good song, and this is just a good album. They only gave it 3 stars here in Sassy.
Too low.
Even though they were like, this is a great album. I think they just didn't, they thought it wouldn't be cool to give it more than 3 stars. Which, poor Rick Astley, like, I feel like that's what keeps happening. It's not his fault.
No, I mean, Karen is the reviewer, and she says some of the tracks are, quote, frighteningly close to disco, and it's just funny to think of a time when, like, that was considered to be a diss, as opposed to, like, you know, close to disco is a good thing. Like, it's music you dance to. This is a positive.
How far away are we from, like,
Disco that? Demolition? Yeah. I think that was, like, 79 or 80. So, yeah, this is a great album. For sure, 3 stars is too low. Like, it's so many hits on it. Still stands.
Unska, unska, do you like unska, unska? You will like Madonna's You Can Dance. Again, I really thought Dave was going to play Never Gonna Give You Up. But like, in the show notes, he called it Never Gonna Get You Up.
The Kevin Coogan of Rick Astley songs.
Never Gonna Get You Up.
It's a song about a broken alarm clock.
No, that's not what that says, Dave. Genuinely dizzy. Never Gonna Get You Up.
No. Okay.
He got dick rolled. Oh God. Okay. So I know. Okay. So Madonna's You Can Dance, which is ridiculous. Sassy gives it a 1 star, and they're just like, these songs are long. Oh, never gonna make you hard. I'm never gonna stand in line. Okay, so it's one day I'll get to this. So this is a Madonna remix album.
Yeah, I'm not sure why they got someone who, like, describes herself, it's Elizabeth, as a Madonna agnostic to review it, because she's like, I'm fine with Madonna. It was like, maybe someone who really likes Madonna should review this album, perhaps, because she doesn't really seem to get the point of an album of remixes and complains that there's nothing new on it.
Oh, but it's good. It's good. It's good for, like, writing music.
Okay. While these two get their shit together, or try to, I'm going to point you to a book written by our friends Mark Blankenship and Sarah D. Bunting, inspired by their podcast, Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. It is Madonna A to Z, a slim volume all about Madonna, which you can purchase. We'll link it in the show notes. An excellent primer on Madonna.
Oh, God. And I made you a mixtape, you guys. So if you want to hear all of these songs and Rickroll yourself and write your new lyrics and call the number and give us your best rendition of Never Gonna Get You Up. The link to the Spotify playlist will be in the show notes. I picked some of my favorite songs from each of these albums.
Yay.
I put it in your locker. Oh my God, Dave, I'm never going to be able to breathe again.
Oh my God.
All right. Because I just see you typing it into the notes with disdain. Never going to get you up.
I didn't even notice. God. Oh, my God. And my first thought was, it's a broken alarm clock.
Oh boy.
Never gonna make the bus. I'm sorry,
that's so stupid.
So stupid. Never gonna get me up.
Oh my God. Okay. Alright.
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 Here we go.
Enough of this tomfoolery.
Let's go from the music to the movie reviews. This is Watch It, the section is called. And there are, you know, like, it's a warning, but also an approval. Watch It. Was this when slap bracelets were a thing?
Slap bracelets? I feel like they were a little later than this.
Really? Later?
Okay.
The slap bracelets were like Leah's time.
Oh, okay.
Ah, that's why. The first movie is Moonstruck, 5 stars from Sassy and 5 stars still from this lady right here. This is a good movie. It holds up.
Yeah. The reviews by Elizabeth, review, again, doesn't really tell you much about it. It's like, this is a romantic movie. The actors do a good job. She's very superficial, given that it goes on to be, you know, the movie that Cher wins her Oscar for. Reading the review is kind of funny in that light, but also funny in light of the movie that John Patrick Shanley, the screenwriter, is known for this year, Wild Mountain Time.
Oh boy.
I'm not going to spoil it. I obviously have not seen it, but I did read the spoiler for what it's about, and it's crazy. Crazy what has happened to him.
I hear it's the bee's knees.
Yeah.
This review has, it's like it's telling you that it's a safe movie to go see anything, to go, like, with anyone, too.
That's true. So, yes.
That's a nice review when you're like, what am I going to, you know, are you, like, in that date, should you go to Beetlejuice or should you go to Moonstruck?
Right.
It's showtime.
Slap bracelets were invented in 1983 and kind of hit the market mid to late 80s.
All right, sorry.
I guess everybody could be correct, depending on where they were in the world and how long things took to get there, Regina.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honor. Our second movie is Anna. It got 4 stars from Sassy, and this is the first time I've ever heard of this film. Yeah, I watched the trailer and I was like, oh, I think I might watch this.
Really?
Yeah, it's not... It looks like from the trailer a lot of women lying down, touching each other on the scalp while talking about Czechoslovakia.
Right.
That seems okay right now.
Chucks all of Pammy's boxes.
Ah!
I got a clip from the trailer for you. This is okay. Sally Kirkland and who? Paulina
Porizkova.
Sally Kirkland is Anna. Introducing Paulina Porizkova as Christina.
Mushrooms and raisins in the stuffing, dear.
Together, they lead one extraordinary life. Vestron Pictures presents Anna.
I missed the first time. It was a Vestron picture.
Sally Kirkland won a Golden Globe for Best Actress for this. I don't
really? You know what I have to say about that?
But I like that. That has just enough John Waters with just enough like David Lynch that I don't know. And Moonstruck, I'll watch it. Maybe. I'm gonna try it. Our next movie is Good Morning Vietnam, which got 3 stars in the review. Catherine's mostly talking about how awesome Robin Williams' face is and how great his face is and that she loves his face. And then she kind of blows off the plot, which in her defense, I don't remember much outside these radio monologues anyway that we all remember from this film.
It's true. That is the part everyone remembers about that movie.
Now we have September, a Woody Allen film, a 1-star review from Sassy, very ahead of their time of knowing, like, whatever, we don't like him.
Well,
right? Like she's like, she does start with, like, fine. I guess, yes, you're right. They're trying to make him seem like someone your older siblings think is cool.
Yes.
Not necessarily a sex symbol or anything like that, but just like Woody Allen is like, you'll hear about him because people who are smart watch his movies.
Right.
But this isn't it.
Right.
Dave, do you want to mention what this September review gets us to?
I'm sorry, what was
that? He's sort of the grandfather of funny nerd types like Anthony Michael Hall and Keith Coogan.
Oh,
the CCC.
All right. 4. Our triple C is now at 4.
Yep.
Excellent. That's just weird, guys. I know we've all conditioned our listeners already in episode 2 to expect a lot of Keith Kevin Coogan content, but 4 mentions in the first issue of a magazine is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yes. Yeah.
They went full Coog. in a Woody Allen review. It's great. Yeah.
Where it has no relevance.
None.
Absolutely none.
Like, that is the star-shaped toy going into the round hole. Like, it is like, that is a peg that will not fit.
They did it anyway.
They did. They found a way.
Next, we have One to Watch, where they profile usually a young man, sometimes a lady, but generally a man who's on the come up and why you should pay attention to him and his career. And this time it's Charlie Schlatter, circa 18 again. I could never confirm if he's related to the comedy producer George Schlatter, same last name, spelled the same and everything. So let's assume he's not a nepotism case, because if he were, he would probably be much more famous. But a couple of years after this, he will play Ferris Bueller in the very ill-advised TV adaptation of Ferris Bueller's Day Off on NBC, which was, in addition to being unnecessary in general,
Had already been done.
Extra unnecessary because Parker Lewis Can't Lose had already been a show and was still on.
It wasn't a bad show.
No.
Like, it was derivative, but it was a better TV show than Ferris Bueller for
sure. Yes. But noteworthy because Jennifer Aniston played Jeannie on it, a pre-Friends Jennifer Aniston, and they dated as well. But he went on to marry Colleen Gunderson, a publicist, in 1994. They are still married. They have three kids. He's on Instagram, so there are pictures of them. And I have to say, they are an exceptionally attractive family, even for an actor. Like, he's cute, wife is cute, kids are cute. Dog's cute. All
yeah.
super cute. Yeah. We'll link his Instagram in the show notes. He never really became a leading man after a few attempts, but he's definitely like still a working character actor and still very busy and booked. So good for him. And he also went public in 2018 about living with chronic myeloid leukemia, but seems to be doing very well. So we have nothing but good wishes for Charlie Schlatter and the extended Schlatter family.
Now we have our first of the two features, our celebrity spotlights, let's say. Feature one is Robert Downey Jr. is a little weird, but we like him, by Ian Blair and Christina Kelly. You had mentioned the photographer, so I looked up the photographer, Firuz Zahidi, and he shot a lot of pictures that you have seen before. But the one that you've seen the most is probably Uma on the bed in Pulp Fiction, the Pulp Fiction poster Uma shot, which I have stared at a lot while in fights with boyfriends. And just Uma looking at me with that cigarette, like, girl, leave.
That's definitely a moment in time, for sure. Yes,
thanks, Firuz.
What's interesting about it, reading it at this time, is how much it feels like they're writing around what's actually going on. And, you know, what we know now is that at this time in history, Robert Downey Jr. was using a lot of drugs, and he speaks frankly about that now, that that's what was going on at the time. But, you know, it's not clear when you read it now whether the authors knew that and then were trying to, like, be euphemistic about it, or if they were like, wow, he sure has a lot of pep, you know?
Oh, they absolutely knew.
I think
reading that, I could tell they knew. They just weren't sure how much they were allowed to say out loud.
Okay.
When your livelihood depends on celebrity access.
Yes.
And it's the same, like, video game reviews. Mm-hmm. Like, people are always slagging on video game reviews because it's like, if you give bad reviews, they may stop giving you games in advance.
And right.
You can't compete with the places that do. And it's sort of the same thing here, where I feel like they had a line they couldn't go over for their own sake, them being sassy.
Right.
So I think you can read plenty between the lines of what they're saying here.
I suppose that's true.
It's also a little for his sake, because I really pick up what you're saying on the bold blue, we like him, over the article. Like, it's to him. It's like, Robert, it's okay. We like you. Because the stuff in here talking about his childhood and the things that his dad put him in, and even just like him saying, like, I kind of have a lot of experience with what my character in Less Than Zero is going through. They're clearly talking around a lot of stuff and just letting him know that they wish him well.
Yes. I definitely think they care less about access with a certain kind of subject, because they definitely are more savage with, I mean, we'll definitely see it in the next issue with Tiffany. Whew. Because they do not give a fuck about burning that relationship to the ground.
Yeah, Charlie Sheen's got it coming to him soon, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, but with someone like this, I think you're right, where it's like, we want him to prosper, we don't want to, and we also don't want to, like, wreck his reputation with his younger fans as well. I think that's a consideration, too. But yeah, the stuff about his dad is interesting too, where they the opener, like the lead is about him being in his father, director Robert Downey Sr., of course, his an X-rated movie. And Robert Downey Jr. has also subsequently said in interviews that, like, his dad gave him weed when he was a kid and stuff. Like, he had been through some shit by this time, and, like, he did not really have a great childhood. And so all of this sort of informs the roles that he was taking and generally, like, his non-sobriety and the troubles that he continued to have, like, from here until he became sober, like, in the 2000s. Like, it took a while.
So at the time, Robert Downey Jr., yes, no?
Yes, I had this poster for 1969 on my wall. I have a lot of posters.
Okay, but now then, Robert Downey Jr. today, does he work for you? Does he? Because he feels like one of those guys that rugs up nicely.
That what?
Rugs up.
What? Is rugs. That a dirty phrase?
Rugs?
No, rugs. You know,
like you
rugged.
Roll them up like a rug?
Got rugged.
Oh.
Got rugged. Rugged up. You rugged okay. up.
Did you just make that up?
Yeah, I did.
Did you just make I love
it's
it.
It's like glow up, but for rugged guys.
Oh, okay. He rugs up. Ooh, I like it, Dave. You've got a future here at Sassy.
I feel like I know too much about his personal life, and like he's trying to like rehabilitate Mel Gibson too much, and like he's got weird political things and stuff, but he also produced Perry Mason, which I liked, so it's hard. He's not my guy. You know who really likes him, though? My sister. He's like on her laminated list. Mm. She loves him. Yeah.
I guess I don't know all of the stuff that would deter me from him. So, because to me, he's still like, that guy just makes a lot of jokes, and he's funny, and he's you know, off the wall, and who knows what's going to happen. Like, I enjoy the insouciance, right? Am I saying that correctly? I enjoy his, like, whatever. His yeah. attitude. Yeah.
Back then, I don't think I had seen enough of his work to really have an opinion. I still have never seen Less Than Zero to this day. But I did, like, I saw The Pickup Artist in the theater by myself. It was like, I was a very youthful adopter of, like, seeing movies alone. And it came out in 1987, so I was really young. I was probably, like, 12 seeing a movie by myself. And that was the first movie that I can remember seeing and choosing to see and thinking at the end of it, that was a bad movie. And it was.
You're still young enough to have that kid movie energy where every movie you saw was the best movie you saw.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And that was the end of that era where I was like, oh, movies can be bad. Interesting. Then we have our next and final feature. This girl, Justine Bateman, has touched Michael J. Fox, Scott Valentine, and Jason Bateman. What's She Got That You Don't? By John Elder for the first and last time ever, and rightly so, because, dude, Jason Bateman is her brother. What is your problem? Why are you such a perv? Get out of Sassy. We hate you.
How did this get in the magazine?
Yuck.
Like, how did this get past everybody, right? Like, it just seems like, did they get it? Like, did John Elder know and he handed in the copy like 2 hours before they had to go to print?
Yeah.
Because I gotta believe that the editorial team would read this and just go, ooh, no.
Yikers.
Like, I don't think people's vision of what is icky has changed that much between now and then.
Oh, no.
That
no.
This wouldn't be like, ooh, red flag.
Yeah. So we should explain. So Sassy's publisher was Australian, and it owed a lot of its DNA to an Australian teen magazine that by this point had been around for several years called Dolly. Neil came over from there, Jacinta, who was in the fashion department, same thing. And so this guy, near as I've been able to determine from my research, was also an Australian writer. So I don't know if it was like they had stringers doing stuff like as a favor or something, because as I said, he never wrote for them again. Generally, there weren't a lot of guys doing writing until like Mike came along and started contributing articles. But yeah, the idea that he just like turned in his copy when it was too late for them to have anything else to fill with is, I think, an interesting theory, because...
Or it got rejected from somewhere else. That you just made me think like, oh, like he wrote this for somewhere else and they were like, this is gross. And he... Because the only way to really position the reader in this is to assume that you are Justine Bateman, and there's some wish fulfillment to some dude fawning all over your lips asking you questions about your Porsche when you're like, you want to talk about Buddhism and literally anything else.
So it's just a straight Q&A format. with a brief intro where he like he writes in the second person, which is first of all like so pretentious also. But then his opening question is, so what's it like to have the best lips on TV? That's his opener. Like, so we're going to link in the show notes to like several articles about like just gross tropes of male profile writers that they use with female celebrity subjects where it's like, stop trying to get her to fuck you. She's not going to fuck you. Because that seems like what's going on here. And it's just so disgusting. It's like really unpleasant and so off brand for Sassy.
It's that, but it also has the tone that he's very pleased with his own questions.
He thinks he's brilliant.
So bad, especially the part where he like describes himself walking into the scene with like a 50s like
white tuxedo jacket.
Like, ugh, dude, remove yourself from the equation.
Yeah.
This is why it wasn't hard to love Robert Downey Jr. when this was your comparison.
That's right? A great point.
Two kinds of dudes who like nerd girls. I'm going with Downey.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Let's just talk about Dave's, how he walks in the door. I'll just read a little bit. Because it's hard. We can all be like, bleh. But when you read it, I want you to bleh too with us. So join us, shall you? So you knock on the door. I'm reading now. So you knock on the door and you're dressed in a white 1950s tux jacket and Justine puts down her book and shakes your hand. She sits on the bed, arranges her light floral print drop-waisted dress, crosses her cowgirl booted feet, stares you in the eye and smiles. You can tell she's thinking, what are we going to talk about? You've decided not to mention the fact that her private life is constantly splattered all over the trashy newspapers. Then there's this quiet moment. The kind of quiet moment you feel at the finals of Wimbledon just before the defending champion serves for match point.
So what's it like having the best lips on TV?
Where did the Wimbledon thing come from? I guess Wimbledon was on TV the night before he wrote this.
Yeah. Yes, and yeah, he saw boots, feet, man, woman, man. Camera,
I'm just going to say booted feet is just not a great phrase to stick into a story like this. There's just something not.
Yeah,
cowgirl footed. Cowgirl.
Yeah. Booted cowgirl feet. Booted feet sounds like something that happens in an abattoir or something like that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. It'll give you a case of the Glembies is what will happen.
Honestly, I don't want a male writer writing about a female subject's feet at all, because it just makes me think, oh, okay, got it, you're a perv. Like, even without the lips question, it would be like, stop noticing her feet.
How old is Justine Bateman here?
22.
She's 22.
All right. Yeah. And, you know, God bless her for trying to, like, work around these questions repeatedly, and they keep it in, and it's obvious. So, like...
Yeah.
Like, is he, I guess he's oblivious to the fact that he is asking these really gross questions and she is trying not to answer them because they are gross. And then he keeps on trying to ask the same thing in different ways.
I mean, at this point, she had been a celebrity for half a dozen years at least. Like, this is not her first haha rodeo cowgirls boots, but she's good at parrying him. But that doesn't make it okay that he keeps trying.
So he tries to parry her answers too. Like when he's like, did you get a speeding ticket? And then she says, I got one in a particular spot where the police hang out near my house. And then he's like, to us, parenthetical, that's in Southern California, San Fernando Valley, in case you were wondering. And then in the middle of his own question, he's like, so, parenthetical, I search my mind for a question that doesn't cut too close to the bone. Something light, something impersonal. Do you have wild dreams?
We know.
What's a typical Justine Bateman dream? Come on. So she's like, oh my God, I'm going to answer the question about my dreams. Andrew Dice Clay talked to me more than Michael Jackson would. Michael Jackson was like, I got to go. And I was like, okay. And then Andrew Dice Clay was like, I'm just going to keep talking to you until he's gone. And I was like, it's doing me a real solid, Dice. Thanks. I didn't appreciate that. And then I was like, I don't understand what year this is. And he was like, because he was like, now, Dice. He was like, I don't either. And I was like, because he looked really alive. And he was like, right? And then I ordered a Glenby Neat for my dame.
Next time, fashion editorials at a beach and an old rail yard. Beginner makeup lessons and how to wear bandanas, Pam already knows. Ads, staff stuff, your calls. For my plug this week, I went back to 1990 with our friends, the aforementioned Sarah D. Bunting, also Jeb Lund, and John Ramos to talk about Postcards from the Edge on the Quaid in Full podcast, and we will link that in the show notes.
I would like to plug someone else. I'd like to plug R. Eric Thomas and all things R. Eric Thomas, starting with Here For It, his book. Please subscribe to his humor newsletter. He is getting me through the pandemic, one hilarious essay at a time. I love R. Eric Thomas. I do not know him. This is a plug, pure fandom. You can follow Tara on Twitter or Instagram at Tara Ariano. You can follow me on Twitter or Instagram at Pamela Ribbon. You can follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Listen to Sassy. I'm never going to say it at the same time as you, Tara. I'm very bad at simultaneous stuff, and I hope it becomes our runner. Please rate and review us on the podcast app of your choice to help other listeners find us. And once again, thank you for all of your really nice letters and reviews. Yes.
Let me dispense with my plug first. I have a podcast called The Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show,
yes,
which is exactly what you think it is. It is three people battling it out for pop culture knowledge supremacy. You can find that at usaquizshow.com.
Woo.
You can call us here. Our hotline is 720-SASSY-GO. Please leave us a voicemail about the show or magazine, questions, comments, and we'll probably play it on a future episode, that future episode being next week. Woo-hoo. You can find more information about the podcast, scans of important parts of the magazine, and links to the stuff we talked about today at our website, listentosassy.com. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time for the March 1988 fashion and magazininess episode.
Woo! Bring your tampons.